Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we talk about something of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 10.
This week, Daisy's going to share something of interest that she has found. Daisy, what do you have?
Well, I've got two things. One of them is a poem. I've been holding on to this poem for ages because I've been wanting to use it for a while, but it was waiting for the right thing to come along that it would sit within. But I'm going to leave the poem until the end.
Of course.
So there are two episodes of the Feel Better, Live More podcast with Rangan Chatterjee that I want to mention, although really I'm just focusing on one. Both of them are with a guy called Peter Crone, also known as the Mind Architect. The recent one was called How to Break Free from the Limitations of Your Mind. And that reminded me, when I was listening to that last week, how much I got from the first one, which was called How to Create the Life You Were Born to Live. And most of what I'm going to talk about comes from that original episode. The guy himself, Peter Crone, is an interesting guy. He's a Brit, but he moved to LA, I think it was, in his late 20s, after first of all getting a degree and a master's in exercise physiology at Loughborough University. You won't know Loughborough, but it specializes in sports. He had quite a tough childhood. He lost his mum to cancer when he was just 7. And his father died when he was 17. And again, you won't have heard of this, I shouldn't imagine, but it was a massive, massive news event in the UK. And that was the Zeebrugge ferry disaster. I remember it really well, actually. I think it was in the late 80s. And it was one of the roll-on, roll-off ferries. Typically go backwards and forwards across the channel. And they have big doors that come down, cars roll on, roll off. And there was some kind of problem with the doors. Either they didn't close properly or the seals weren't working properly or something. But basically they let in water and this ferry capsized. I think about 200 people died. Wow. It was a massive news event. And his dad was an engineer, I think, on the ferry. And so he died. And so he was left without both his parents at quite an early age. So yeah, so sports was his thing and he moved to America. I can't remember why. I think one of his friends lived in New York or something was where he went to. Then he moved to LA and got involved in films or something. I'm not sure. But very quickly moved on to be a personal trainer, did really well at that. Actually ended up being the personal trainer for Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and travel around the world with them and advising them and really got a lot out of it. But his real passion was exploring the power of the mind. And that's what he ended up shifting over to do that. So he quit working with the rich and famous as personal trainers and went on to explore this passion of his. I find what he has to talk about so interesting, really resonated a lot with me and made me think about things that I say to myself, the internal monologue that goes on. And I'll tell you more about that, obviously, as we get there. But to kick off, just really, I guess, rounding up what he talks about is to start with a quote of his where he just says, if you don't take care of what's going on in the subconscious of people's minds, at best, you are going to be the greatest version of your limited self. And he talks about how people are stuck within the parameters of their blind spots, which are beliefs in inadequacy, scarcity, insecurity. And he says that we develop survival mechanisms to cope with these compensations, if you like, for this lack of ease. He talks a lot about disease, but he says dis-ease. So he talks about ease and dis-ease. And he said that these can manifest in physical symptoms over time. He mentioned several examples in the podcast, but one that I thought was particularly interesting because it had such a big change was a guy he was recording a podcast with. He was the guest on this other guy's show. The guy in question had a really bad rash around his eyes. He said it was just so red and looked so, he said just looking at it made you just, you know, want to scratch your eyes. It looked really irritating and was obviously really affecting this guy. And during the interview, he asked Peter if he had any thoughts about it. And Peter commented that from an Ayurvedic perspective, one of the things he's one of these people who likes to get extra learning from all sorts of different areas and principles and things, and he brings it into what he does. And so he was quite interested in the principles and the perspectives. And he said from this perspective, he thought the guy had excess heat or pitta. And this was exacerbated by foods, things like hot spices and alcohol and so on. But he says emotionally that he thought that he was using anger to protect himself from being hurt. And this was the kind of energy that comes from anger, heat. So it was all wrapped up in this manifestation that was having this physical manifestation of the rash on his face. The guy, apparently, I must go and watch it. He said you could hear him in the back of his mind. He was thinking, this is podcast gold. Apparently, you know, the guy got really emotional talking about it and brought him to tears and things like that. So it sounds like a really moving episode. But he talked about his parents separating and how he put lots of pressure on himself to not mess up, basically, and avoid repeating this in his own life. And Peter went on to talk about how we're often trying to avoid our own history and we judge that history harshly. And he says judgment causes friction, which again is more heat. So it was all these things that were going on with this guy that was having this physical manifestation of this rash. So he basically just really made the guy aware of what was going on and encouraged him to release all these things that were holding him back and have a shift in his subconscious to release all the hurt that had been trapped. And the guy called him later on that evening and he said, you're not going to believe this. And Peter Crome was like, yeah, I am going to believe it. He knew what the guy was going to say. And he said that the rash was already 50% better. So this was the same day. And then he called him the next morning. And apparently the rash had gone down to about 10 to 15% of what it was the day before. And he talks about this cascade effect, which ends with this physical manifestation, obviously not necessarily that physical manifestation, but it manifests in different ways in different people. And he says it starts with programming. And he talks about the difference between things like DNA, which are fixed expressions you can't change. They're not your choice, they're just who you are. So, you know, like how tall you are or what color eyes you have or something like that. And then he talks about conditioning, habits that are more superficial and changeable. This is really the crux of it. And this is where he talks about, this is where the cascade starts. And he says it starts, of course, in childhood with language. He said from a very early age, this is when we start learning that sometimes just being you is not enough. So, you know, maybe you get told off for doing something or whatever it is, but you just start to become aware that sometimes it's not enough just to be you. And you start to create subconscious patterns that you have to act in a certain way in order to stay part of a community, you know, usually your family. And these repeated behaviors become conditioned or programmed, so we no longer think about them. Like walking, you know, when you're learning to walk, it's something you really have to think about, you really have to focus on, you have to put a lot of energy into it. Once you can do it, you know, and unless something dramatic happens, you don't have to think about walking anymore. It's just conditioned, it's programmed, it's there. And he says the same things about these feelings. He says, but feelings of not being enough, not worthy, not loved, etc., become insidious programming that you adapt to with behaviors like people pleasing or perfectionism, things like that, and can also manifest in addictive behaviors that start damaging your health and so on. But he says, and this is the crucial bit, and this is kind of what everything, the work he does hinges on, These experiences that started the cascade are subjective. It's a story that forms in your head and then shapes your behavior. He maintains that you can transcend the constraints of your subconscious, which are words, not truths, and the constructs and codes you have been stuck within, because your brain's default is to stop you from doing things that are wrong, quote unquote, because the cost is too high, i.e. something like rejection, you know, rejection from your parents, fear of that and so on. But he said it's funny how people often defend their limitations and use external evidence to confirm their internal narrative. He said the ego's priority is to be right. We touched on this before, didn't we? The problems with the ego. But that original, I'm not wanted, or I'm not enough, or I lack in some way, is self-generated. It's not a truth. And he encourages people to see this and then go on to imagine what it would feel like to live without that, live without those constraints. And he says it's very easy to become addicted to stories that define us and addicted to your quote unquote problem, trying to do everything possible to fix your problem and fighting your history. I spoke about in the Jewel episode about this idea of reframing things. And when I re-listened to this podcast, I remembered this is where I first got it from. I knew it was somewhere, but I couldn't remember where. And it was this podcast. And he actually talks about, they use different examples, but one of the examples they use is I am depressed versus I have depression. I am depressed. You're associated with the feelings and the condition. I have depression, he says, creates a little space, just like Jewel was talking about. And in doing so, you recognize that it's something you have, it's not who you are, which has a deeper understanding that it can change. And he says, and I think this is really interesting, as long as you're trying to cure an addiction, solve a problem, the more you are reinforcing the belief that deep down you have a problem. And he maintains that nobody has a problem. They just have programming and conditioning that is inaccurate because it is based on this subjective narrative that has started in your mind. And he says, in the absence of these constraints, you can experience freedom. This is his whole thing. It's finding freedom, freedom from these constraints that basically have been self-imposed. When you have freedom and an escape from dis-ease, you no longer need the things that helped you escape. Not to say, he says, that it, you know, it's not going to take some work. It is, especially when you're talking about things like addictions. So really, what to do about it? I mean, there's so many more things that he spoke about, but I had to try and pull out just enough to make a cohesive whole, but really recommend you go and listen to the whole podcast. I think it's about 2 hours or something. It's a long podcast, but it's absolutely chock-a-block with things. I was furiously, one of those ones I was furiously typing notes for. But he says, it's just a case of these steps. So the first step is awareness, just being aware of this programming that started way back when. I'm human. This happens. I'm human. The second step is to ask yourselves if these narratives are truths. He says often if you put a question mark at the end, you'll start to realize it'll bring home that actually they're not truths, that there is this fiction that you've created. Am I really inadequate? Am I really not worthy of love? Next step, no. It's what you feel. It's not a truth. And then the final step is that in the absence of that, what becomes available? Freedom and possibility. And there's just one more thing that I thought was interesting. And it's, he talks about an acceptance and finding a harmony and balance in the now. And he talks about how he wants people to stop chasing an idealized future. And I've definitely done this. When I lose weight, everything's going to be okay. When this, when that. And he's got quite a few little sort of soundbite quotes, but this was one of them. True happiness is the absence of the search for happiness. And he says what he means by that is just being totally happy with where you are, even if you also have creative plans for the future. And he also says, focus on the future you're creating for yourself rather than trying to fix a history behind you that you can do nothing about. Obviously, once it's behind you, you can't change it. And he has a metaphor that he likes using. He says it's like driving a car, looking in the rear view mirror all the time and wondering why you keep bumping into things. So I started talking about a poem about reframing and I went a bit all over the place. But I touched back to that base after mentioning it in the Jewel episode that meant quite a lot to me. And just thinking really that internal story that you tell yourself is so important and the language you use is really important. And I do have a poem, but that's for later.
I can't even tell you just how I have not listened to this man before, but how much in alignment it is with my approach to thinking about anxiety, depression, anything that we kind of struggle with, in that so much of it is based on, like you said, the stories that we tell ourselves, the subconscious thoughts. And some information that I've read in several different sources talk about in any given day, we might have, I think, 60 to 70,000 thoughts. And 90 to 95% of them are our subconscious thoughts. So they're thoughts that we've already internalized and we just keep repeating. And so you can imagine out of that many, how many of them are just problematic thoughts. Mm. And so few of our daily thoughts are new, creative, part of our conscious mind. But that's really where action comes from. And this ties back in some to what we talked about in an early episode too. But I think this is so powerful, this idea that we have to learn to start to challenge those underlying beliefs that we've based the story on and start challenging the validity of the story if we want to change how it's affecting us in the here and now.
That's really interesting, actually, because he talks about how you should create rather than react.
Mm-hmm. Because reacting is, again, coming from our subconscious mind. Mm. It's old responses. And if you piece all of this together with other theories and ways of understanding things, so much of our subconscious thoughts come from a very early stage in our development. Mm. When our brain is in a particular brain wave most of the time, it makes us very sponge-like. We just absorb things. So up until about the age of 7, we just take things in. And so, you know, I always use an example of if a parent is angry and the child's room is a mess, the child learns that if I clean my room, people will love me. Or, you know, they'll make an interpretation because they don't know how else to make sense of a parent is angry right now. Mm. Must be because my room is a mess. Or that's why their parents got divorced or something. We don't have sophisticated reasoning skills at that age.
That's right. He talked about that. He said if something along those lines happened to you as an adult, you could reason it away.
Uh-huh.
You don't as a child, do you? You just have this gut reaction to something. And that's why if it gets embedded in your psyche, you still have that gut reaction when that gets triggered as an adult. You still have that gut childish reaction, even though you're an adult, but you can't rationalize it because it's your child gut that's reacting, isn't it?
Right. And it overrides you from being in that more rational,
so powerful,
thoughtful place now. And so this is why we really have to start to confront those beliefs and learn to get rid of them, correct them, update them, bring them into reality versus our interpretation from age 4 or age 6. Because obviously those are going to be limited interpretations.
Yeah, it's really seemed to be the work he does is really unpicking it right back to its bare bones and exposing it, laying it out in front of you as an adult. And that's what he says about asking that question. Are you really unlovable? Yeah, you know, I totally get. That's what you felt. That was your subjective response, age 5 or whatever it was. totally understand that. It's a perfectly human reaction. But here in the now, as a rational adult, mm-hmm. you know, does it still make sense?
Right.
It's coming back to this whole reframing thing that I find so interesting, just creating this bit of distance, creating this space to be mindful and to start questioning those beliefs, those associations that if you're not careful, you just tie to your personality. Rongan spoke about an episode of The Doctor in the House he did. He used to go and live with these people for 6 weeks or something, so really find out what was going on in their lives. And it was a woman who had fibromyalgia, and he worked with her on all sorts of things. And by the end of the 6 weeks, she was pain-free. And he said, you know, he was really proud of this. And when it came out on TV, he was really surprised to get this backlash. And a lot of that was from people who, in their profile name, he said fibro was in their profile name, you know, Fibro Pete or something. And this was where they were talking about the quote unquote problem being part of your identity. He was saying when he started thinking about it that he could see why they were finding it really difficult to accept that this woman could become pain-free in 6 weeks. Oh, she must not have had fibro in the first place, or you're making it up, or whatever it is, because this is part of who I am. And it's such a big problem that I can't believe that it could be solved so easily, potentially. So very, very interesting.
It's so funny that you bring this up, because I'm not kidding you. Like, for years, this has been like my underlying way of trying to help people, but it's complicated. You know, it's hard sometimes to go back and try and understand those stories and the beliefs that we base it on. But one woman, I'm sure I'll do something on her at one point, that I listen to all the time. In her pocket strategy, she uses for everyone, billionaires, royal family, doesn't matter. She goes in and writes on their bathroom mirror, "I am enough." So they have to see that all the time.
Oh, that sounds familiar. I think they might have even mentioned her, actually.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember who it was, but yeah. Yeah.
You know, she identifies it as that's, you know, if there are, say, 3 to 5 themes that all of our problematic beliefs come from, that's like number one. I'm not enough.
It's not surprising that, I mean, it sounds easy enough, that something that you can reprogram, but it's not surprising that it's difficult and that it's complicated, because if these are stories that you've been telling yourself for however many decades, it's going to take a while, isn't it, to undo that. But I promised you a poem.
Yes, let's hear it.
This is a 2020 poem. Now, you'll have seen lots of memes about 2020, the year, what to expect next. Who posted something about some experiment going on somewhere, about something about trying to make a dinosaur out of a chicken, or I can't remember what it was, but it's like, this is not the year to try that. So all these kind of memes, you know, this is a year where everything's is going wrong. Some of them are really funny, but that's the kind of the theme. This one, however, was a bit different, and I really, really liked it, and it perfectly fits the whole notion of reframing, switching your perspective, looking at something in a different way. So this is a poem by someone called Leslie Dwight, just something I saw that was doing the rounds on Facebook. And when I went to look for her, it was just something that she'd put up on her Instagram feed. What if 2020 isn't cancelled? What if 2020 is the year we've been waiting for? A year so uncomfortable, so painful, so scary, so raw, that it finally forces us to grow. A year that screams so loud, finally awaking us from our ignorant slumber. A year we finally accept the need for change, declare change, work for change, become the change. A year we finally band together instead of pushing each other further apart. 2020 isn't cancelled, but rather the most important year of them all. There you go.
I love it.
So do I.
It's really powerful.
I think, like probably everyone else, had been thinking down that same track. What's next? What is next? You know, first of all, there's this virus that's killing untold numbers of people. Then all the other things that are coming up to the surface. Yeah, it made me think of, you know, when you fill a glass and there's that moment when the water sort of domes above the top and the surface tension is just holding it in place, but you can see it's going to go at any minute. And then all of a sudden it spills over. That's kind of what it feels like. This year has kind of felt like, with all this stuff bubbling up to the surface. But I just think that's that slight switch, that slight reframing, makes it feel like it could be something positive could come out of it, that this could be a year of monumental change. So that's how I'm looking at it.
And history, and even I think for most of us, our life experience tells us that we grow through difficult times. Mm. We emerge, we gain insight. And only through having to be stretched do we achieve those things.
That's right. Strength through adversity.
That's right.
Okay, well, I hope everyone out there, and you, of course, have a fabulous week.
Thanks, Daisy. Have a great one, everybody.